Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster, and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship, and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and wannabe author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
My name is Hayley Katzen and I've just published my debut memoir called Untethered. It's with Centura Press. Yay! So excited. It's the story of how I, an urban academic migrant, moved to live in the country on an off-the-grid cattle farm with my partner, Jen. And it's got six parts. It's all about home and belonging, kind of how displacements unstitch us and belongings sort of put us back together again and reshape us. The third part of the book is titled Community, and in chapter 29 is titled Another Writer. And I thought today I'd read to you from this chapter, which is about the woman Nessie Bell, who's a poet. She was 84 when I met her. And I was new to the country and struggling with it and trying to find some connections for myself because I'm not a particularly manual person and my world is heady and intellectual, and I have had quite a lot of challenge of trying to find my place here. So I met Nessie one Friday night at the local community hall, and she used to wear this, you know, red beret at a jaunty angle, and she used a walking stick. And she had one glass eye and glaucoma. But anyway, I got myself an invite and I went along with my warm muffins wrapped up in a tea towel. And I had this visit, so I thought I would read to you about Nessie for a moment. Nessie had been preparing for my visit. She'd found a copy of her book down through the years. She'd published it herself in 2001, assisted by her cousin Isabel, who'd self-published a number of books about the area's history. "How awesome, Nessie, you've written a book," I said, as I looked at the yellow cover illustrated with her line drawings of horses grazing beneath a large gum. "Wow, this is my dream." She sat back in her chair with a self-satisfied side smile. I flicked past the plastic cover and read out the table of contents. The West Wing, concerning a house cow, alone. I flicked to the page with Life on the Land and read out, "I think to live upon the land, you need a stubborn streak, a heart as big as all outside. It's no place for the weak. A sense of humour, that's for sure, to see the funny side of situations rather grim, that touch of fear to hide." I looked up at Nessie. Her eyes were dreamy, a sweet smile on her lips. "Oh, I'm not sure I have all that in me, Nessie," I said. "Reckon there's quite a difference between city and country folk." She nodded, but said nothing. Clearly, she wanted me to keep reading. "Down deep our hearts must always hold a strong love of the soil, a feeling of belonging and a strength for daily toil, respect for all the living things that help to form our life, companionship is working shoulder to shoulder with the wife. I laughed. My mother likes to say she married my stepfather for life, but not for lunch. That's not how it is in the country, is it? I said, addressing both Nessie and her husband Lionel. They nodded, and then Lionel broke into tales about mustering, about how in the old days it'd take days to drive cattle all the way to Lismore for the sale. He didn't mention Nessie, although Jenna told me she'd always worked with him. Nessie listened silently, her eyes staring ahead. When I could, I looked back to the book and read out more of the titles. Well, it's everything about life out here. Faithful animals, droughts and floods, the bank on your back. And this one, my mother never worked. Will I read it out? She smiled a yes. You know my mother never worked. She only kept the house. I hear these words and wish to hide just like a little mouse. Then thinking back upon the years that span my empty life, there comes to mind the many jobs allotted to the wife. You're the original feminist, I said, looking at Nessie. And then read on about raising children, milking cows, feeding animals, drawing water, making clothes, growing vegetables, stitching up animals, preserving surplus veggies, driving to town. Lionel broke in then with a story about his time in the army during the Second World War. When I twisted the conversation back to Nessie, Lionel left us. Nessie gave me a cheeky, victorious smile. I've not written any poetry, I said to Nessie. I did write law books and a play, but now I'm writing short stories. They sort of made up rather than directly about my life, like your poems. Nessie smiled and nodded. I've written lots of poems, she said, getting up. She walked slowly, unsteadily, to a table at the other side of the room. It was loaded with a stack of old exercise books. Clearly, she had no interest in my writing. The pages of the books were filled with her curly cursive, and in among the leaves I found faded bills and circulars with handwritten poems, as well as thin sheets of paper typewritten with wiped out corrections. I flicked through, reading titles and a few lines. Do you think there's enough there for another book? Nessie asked. Evidently, Nessie also thought I was there to help her produce another book. How could I not? As I drove away with the bundle of exercise books, Nessie, her black Labrador beside her, waved and smiled. At home, as I typed Nessie's poems, I was swamped by the rhyming meter, a form and style I'd found numbing and repetitive. Although it wasn't what I'd been educated to regard as real literature, and I missed the surprise and discovery of poetry with varied forms, I didn't want to dismiss it for reasons that sounded so snobbish. What's more, I was deeply touched by the heart and intrigued by the content. The poems told the story of a country childhood, of life as a stockwoman, housewife, mother, wife, grandmother, active community and country women's association member, friend and animal lover. They described a woman anchored to her family and community, to the work of the bush, to her landscape. She really knew home. I was fascinated too by how the poems about cattle work were in a man's voice. To me, the work she did cast her as a true feminist, and yet she silenced herself in her poetry. Surely the one place where she could truly express herself. This was a powerful kind of silencing. I was struck too by how Nessie adhered to the rule, write what you know, a rule I'd heard at school from my English teacher mother and read in countless books on writing. And yet, just as I'd loved studying method acting, drawing on my well of feelings and experiences as I stepped into the high heels of another character on stage, so too, climbing inside another's voice and skin was what had attracted me to writing fiction. I looked up at a line I'd snipped from Sebastian Falk's interview and stuck on the study wall, in capital letters, don't write about what you know. It was this advice I'd been following, but in years to come, when I'd read Henry David Thoreau's Walden about his experience of building and living in a log cabin on the shore of Walden Pond, I'd again think of Nessie and wonder if, back then, I should have heeded her unspoken advice.
Oh, wonderful. That sounds fantastic, Hayley. Nessie sounds amazing. And just that whole experience for you of going, you know, as you say, as a city person into this country environment and meeting people who, you know, you probably not really had any sort of connection with prior to that.
No, I felt enormously fortunate to have had the time I did with her. And we did manage to put together Dreams of a Dreamer, which was her second book, which we published, self-published, and launched it in her nursing home about a month before she died.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's one of the things that's given me more joy than anything in my life. But she really was a great teacher, and I guess that's what I've learned here. You know, I've had a great teacher in Nessie, and ironically, Frankie, my neighbour, who's 83, and he doesn't read or write, so our interests are completely different, and I think he thinks I'm a complete loop. in a way, he's been my other great teacher. You know, he's so content with his very small life of just, you know, Friday, the casino, and his jobs in town. So,
yeah,
you know, I've learned a great deal.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that reading. And let's rewind a little bit. So this is your memoir, Untethered, and I'm really curious about the title, although I think I'm getting a feeling for where that's come from. But could you tell us a little bit more about how you came to write the book and to get to the point where it's now about to be published?
Well, the book is actually started out as a collection of essays in 2014. I quit my job in law. I worked as a legal academic for years and did a lot of research. And I quit that job in 2000 hoping to become an actor, because I thought it's hard to change the world, as one wants to when one's young, through law. But perhaps if I stepped into the shoes of other people and performed them on stage, there might be ways to open hearts and minds. And so I did that. The play was produced and shown in Byron Bay. And then various circumstances, which you'll have to read the book to find out about, led me to move to live with my partner Jen on the cattle farm. So we'd been together for 7 years by that time. And I came to live here feeling quite surprised by my own decision to do so. And I guess the untethering for me is that when I left that profession of mine, and I really was very passionate about law and about change and the capacity for law to make change that really did care and respect people. So leaving the law job was a very big untethering, but I guess I've had a few others. So I'm a migrant. I came to live in Australia when I was 22. I've been estranged from a family, apart from my mum, for most of the last 30 years. And I guess I feel like I left Sydney where I was first when I arrived here. So there have been various untetherings for me, I suppose. And I guess, you know, what the book is about finding home and belonging. So those displacements lead us to perhaps have a hunger for home and belonging. And in my case, I feel like I've looked for it in all sorts of different places. My work has been a very significant one of those places. It's always where I felt safe. And then I've looked for it in political movements like feminism, like the, you know, lesbian, gay, trans, queer community, like the anti-gas movement, which is, you know, being big for us here in the last few years. And then, of course, in, you know, family and friends, in communities, and in my partner. And I guess where these years have come and what the place has shaped for me is that, you know, you can't really shelter in any of those things. Yeah. You need to find home inside.
Is that the journey, I guess, that the book explores, you know, that search almost for home, and then, you know, coming to that understanding of what home is?
And, you know, it's had a few different beginnings and endings. It did start as a collection of essays because I fell in love with the essay. I wrote short story and then had a go at a novel. There's, you know, a novel in the back shed. I wrote quite a lot of short stories quite a lot of them were published and won awards. But, you know, I then shifted to the novel, got very frustrated, and then was encouraged to try nonfiction. And I fell in love with the essay form. So the essays, I hoped to publish a collection of essays, but it was very hard to make that work. And I went to a wonderful editor who advised moving it into memoir. So that's been an interesting journey. And, you know, I've landed up thinking I would end it when I left the farm, because I really didn't think I could be here, even though I loved Jen to bits. I just thought this was not the right place for me. And I landed up coming back. I mean, circumstances do lead us in all sorts of ways. And so, you know, that's the ending that I've come to now. So I think I've learned a great deal from writing essay. I love the texture of essay and its inquiry and its subtlety, really. And yet memoir, you know, this experience, I kept having to take out some of my essayistic thinking But I do hope that I've managed to combine the two, because I love the ideas. And I know I read for ideas as well as feelings. Mm. I think, I mean, the personal essay is what I've written a lot of.
Right.
So it's starting, I mean, what I've loved about writing since I left law is that, you know, my law books and even my research on DV didn't have an I in it at all. So there's this whole notion of the objective writer. So what I've loved about coming to the essay is that the eye is there. The eye is very strongly there. Anything anyone writes is a lens. So I'm looking at life, and I basically have made sense of a rural life through my lens, which is, you know, a very different urban academic kind of lens. So certainly in terms of the kind of essay I'm referring to, it is a much more personal essay. But I think what the essay often does is it is much more interested in the universality of themes and ideas and experiences. And I suppose I feel more comfortable with this as having turned this into memoir, because I feel like what I am writing about is home and belonging and displacement, things that I think we all experience so deeply in different ways and find them in different places.
Yeah. So for you, you know, as you say, you've had many untetherings really in your life, and this particular memoir is about that experience of moving, you know, from an academic job into, you know, a more, well, I guess a world that doesn't really have any sort of hours and regulations and things like that. Also moving from your city-based life into a quite remote area in the country. So what are some of the things that you talk about in your memoir that what are the memories, I guess, that come to mind for you that people might find interesting in the story itself?
I think one of the things that's interesting about it is, especially given COVID-19 times, is the whole notion of solitude and aloneness and not being around the scaffolding which most of us depend for life. I guess one of the big things for me is that I didn't have the skills for this life. So, you know, the farm got burned down in 2002, so we rebuilt. And suddenly there I am, this very academic style person, suddenly having to help with, you know, not just fencing and, you know, cattle work, but also building a house. So learning all those different things, like how to really use a shovel correctly, how to chop wood, and how to work cattle, like that's
it's all that physical thing. Really physical stuff, isn't it?
So that's been huge, and then along with that comes all the fire brigade stuff. So, you know, we've been active members of the fire brigade since the 2002 fire, and yeah, that's been a very big part of my life here. But, you know, in amongst all of that, there I am, a little bit short to actually wind the thick heavy hose back on the truck, and just not particularly skilled with pumps and all that kind of stuff. So they made me sort of president quite early on, and I've sort of become the admin person. But I have loved sometimes going out on the truck with everyone, because there's a particular kind of camaraderie. So there have been all sorts of, you know, sort of fish out of water experiences for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the journey of the book, really, is trying to find, am I completely nuts to be here? Or is there something that I needed to learn about being in the country? And what this, I think it's the art of belonging is a phrase that Hugh Mackay talks about. And I really think that, you know, we kind of have some notion that we're meant to be with people like us. And, you know, that can really change with time as we learn the art of belonging.
Yeah.
So the book is a lot about those sorts of fish out of water things. It's also about my writing journey. And my experience of being someone who was always very able academically, and suddenly finding myself writing creatively and finding it, it just wasn't as easy as everything else was.
Completely
seriously,
different experience.
So, you know, that was normally my safe place and my home was my work, and suddenly that wasn't there when I was on the farm. So I sort of lost myself a lot over a number of years, and was trying to find where I was and who I was. Didn't want to just be Jen's wife. You know, it's a term I've never really wanted for myself. So it's very much about all those sorts of themes and solitude, because, you know, at times I've spent a lot of time here alone. Jen's often out from morning till late, and when her mum was in a nursing home, she would go away for a week or 10 days and I'd be here. Mm. And, you know, that sort of aloneness for someone from the city is quite terrifying, really. Yeah. You know, I could go to town. I have friends 2.5 hours away. And, you know, we do go, but it's not the same as being able to just hop in the car and drive down the road 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I think solitude and aloneness is a big theme that I've tried to write about in this book.
Mm. One that I think a lot of people might have a little bit more understanding of now too, in these times of, you know, COVID, when people are really stuck at home and a lot of people are really struggling with that, particularly if you do live on your own or live isolated away from your family.
It's extraordinary. It's a really interesting time for someone such as myself to watch, because I mean, it's 15 years now since we moved back to the farm after the fire, and I really thought it was my personality limitation that I found it hard, because Jen's always lived in, you know, she had 5 years in the city, but she's basically a country person, and she's, you know, has never understood my desire for that big world out there, and nor does Frankie, my neighbour. so I think it's interesting to, you know, to really think about those things, and I've learned now. I quite love it, to be honest. But I do still want the excitement of the city and that big world out there.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit more about your actual writing journey. So you said that you had written numerous short stories and essays, and, you know, you had won awards and had them published and things. How did you sort of move from that point into writing the full memoir and then going about, you know, having that published?
I did when I was, you know, tragically, depressedly quitting the novel. I wrote a kind of cathartic memoir, a short one for myself, something I wouldn't dream of publishing. And I'd written one essay, I think, and I was encouraged very kindly by Peter Bishop from Varuna. I had a long lines fellowship there for a couple of weeks for my short stories. And another writer, Amanda Webster, another Australian writer, and they both encouraged me to head in the direction of nonfiction. And so I enrolled in it's hard sometimes to study from the farm. I didn't want to just do a straight research degree. So I enrolled in a low residency Master in Fine Arts through City University of Hong Kong, which sadly the program no longer exists. Yeah, it was amazing. I took 4 years to do it. And what it meant is that I would have a mentor who would read my work and comment. So I wrote the essays during that degree over those 4 years. And then I tried during that degree to put them together as a memoir, as a collection. And I just couldn't quite make it right. I couldn't make it work. I wasn't sure how to delete the repetitions. Quite a lot of the essays had been published as well, or been shortlisted or won competitions. So I was trying to find a way to make them work as a whole. And that was tricky. I remember hearing somebody talk about how you can't make a cake from cupcakes. Whole notion of how you put the short pieces together. You know, I always loved the link short story and thought I would go there when I was writing short stories. So I've always, I love the short form, and I've written a really long book now. I think what happened is I had the desire to have a book, and, you know, call that ego, call that just the way it works in the writing community. And unless you have a book, you kind of aren't, you know, get a seat at the table in the same way. So I kept trying with the collection, kept moving myself between memoir, between essay. And then I took it to an editor who didn't know me. Most of the people who'd given me feedback actually knew me. And I think it's tricky when you write nonfiction. I think it's good to have outsiders, complete outsiders. And a wonderful woman, Nadine Davidoff in Melbourne, read it for me. And she steered me. She gave me this wonderful structural report and advised how I could move it from, you know, this collection of essays into memoir. And that's really been the turning point. And I've taken quite a while. That was September 2016. I reworked and reworked, had quite a few big life events in the course of all of it. I did send out one version in 2018 and to four publishers, and got some lovely feedback. One was willing to publish it if I paid the production costs, but I've always needed approval and I didn't want to do that. I wanted somebody to want my book badly enough. And so I decided I had been given some suggestions to restructure and to start with the first time I arrive at this farm rather than when I first landed in Australia as a migrant. And I didn't want this book to be a lesbian love story, which is how one or two of the publishers read it.
Right.
And I think it's part of that as well. But I wanted it to be a search for home. So it was my sticking point. But eventually I did swing it and it was much better. And last February I did started a restructure. And then unfortunately I got diagnosed with ovarian cancer very soon after I started that restructure. So I spent those next few months when I was okay during chemo doing the restructure. And the day before I went up for surgery, I sent it out to some of the publishers I'd sent it to before, as well as Ventura Press. And 3 weeks to the day after I sent it out, I was sitting back in the chemo lounge, and there was Jane Curry's delighted, please, have the rights already been, you know, taken? So please, can I publish it? So I was very lucky. But also one of the things I think is that Jane had read and related to an essay of mine in an anthology called Split, which Ventura published. It's edited by the wonderful Lee Kaufman.
Lee Kaufman. We had Lee on the podcast not long ago, and I've got that book sitting on my pile. I'm dying to dive into that, yeah.
Well, it was wonderful to work with Lee. She's an extraordinary editor. But that was a piece about South Africa and my sense of split from there. And Jane had read that essay and she'd really resonated. It had resonated with her. So she was interested when she saw my book come through her email. So, yeah, that's how it happened. And it's been the most lovely, lovely ride. Apart from having, you know, cancer journey going at the same time. Sorry, didn't mean to use that word journey. That story at the same time as a first publication. It's been a lovely place to land. So I'm deeply grateful.
That's amazing. You've been through the fires again just recently in, you know, October last year. Yeah, so it's been a huge year for you with the book and your illness and the fires again.
Yeah, and we had drought before that. And then we had flood. It's all just tangents. Oh. It's extraordinary. The temporiness of everything. That's clear.
Yeah, that's true. Is there anything else, Hayley, that you'd like readers to know about the book?
I think I've pretty much covered it all. I guess one of the things about writing a memoir is that, you know, you write about yourself, but you actually end up writing about a lot of other people. Mm. So this book is certainly about me and very much about Jen. She's pretty much a major character. It's also about a local community. It's also about my experience of the anti-gas movement. So it's about that movement. And I think one writes about oneself, one automatically writes about others too. So it's one of the interesting and challenging things about writing in this field. It's a memoir, but I do hope that it's got a much more universal interest and significance than simply my story, because I'm not a celebrity. And actually the one agent that I first showed the memoir to before I sent it out that first time, she said to me, it won't get anywhere, Hayley. It's a celebrity market for memoirs. And I guess I'm an ordinary person, and I've ever since I started writing, I've just wanted to write ordinary people's stories. Mm. And mine is ordinary. I think these are issues that we all deal with, really. So,
which is, I think, what makes them interesting to read about. You know, like, yeah, okay, people love the celebrity memoir, but, you know, we want to read about people out there who are just like us and struggling with the same issues and the same emotions and the same obstacles in our lives. You know, like, I think that's what people are attracted to in both fiction and non-fiction.
Yeah. I must say I've started reading more of it than I used to. I was always a fiction reader. I am certainly reading more and more memoir. And I do love the first person. I mean, I guess, you know, I spent a few years studying acting and wrote a play, and it was the play was a series of monologues. So it was one woman, a dramatic monologue. And it was that sort of in that person's body.
Yeah,
which I love. Yeah, it's how to give those voices a space, really.
Yeah. And Hayley, the book comes out on the 1st of May. Would you suggest people go to find the book? Obviously, it's a little bit difficult at the moment, and it's not a great time, obviously, to be launching a book, which is why we're doing the podcast. But there's plenty of places you can get the book, I imagine. So what would you recommend?
Thank you. Thank you for doing the podcast. Book launch podcast. It's fantastic. Firstly, I would suggest that you approach your local bookstore. It'd be great to support our local bookstores during this time. But otherwise, it's available through Booktopia and Book Depository and through all the online, you know, Kindle, Kobo, Apple Books. You can go to Ventura Press's website and there are mm-hmm. links to it there. But yeah, I think it's fairly widely available.
Yeah. Okay, great. And just lastly, before we let you go, what are you actually reading at the moment? What would be another great isolation read, do you think, apart from Untethered, for people out there who might be listening?
You know, I read a book last night. It was a kid's book, and it's called The Secret Home, and it's by Maya Kranz. And it was an absolute treat to read. It's beautifully illustrated and beautifully poetically written. And I think it's very relevant to these times, as well as telling a story from the Second World War about a family sheltering and being alone and then managing to escape to find freedom. So that's actually what I've just finished reading. And the other book I'm reading at the moment is Julia Baird's beautiful Phosphorescence.
I'm reading that too.
Which is a book about, oh, isn't it gorgeous?
It's lovely. Really, really nice. Yeah. I'm loving it.
It's a treat. So that's been lovely. Look, there is quite a big pile. I won't, you know, tell you about The Undying, which is a bit heavy, about, you know, meditation on modern illness and those sorts of things. Those two are where it's done.
Yeah, well, they're great recommendations. Well, thank you so much and good luck with Untethered. It sounds wonderful. And it was lovely to connect with you. So just for anyone out there listening, Hayley worked out just when we started talking that we both did a Charlotte Wood course together online. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but that's what I love about the writing world. There's all these connections that we have and keep coming back.
They are indeed. Thank you so much, Pamela, for this.
Thank you, Hayley. It's been lovely chatting.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at rightsforwomen.com, where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Rights for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now.
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.